Vrishamrnala dhavalam mehantam eva bibhyatam avepamanam padaikena siddhantam shudrataditam. Translation: the bull was as white as a white lotus flower. He was terrified of the Sudra who was beating him, and he was so afraid he was standing on one leg, trembling and urinating. Purport: the next symptom of the age of Kali is that principles of religion, which are all spotlessly white, like the white lotus flower, will be attacked by the uncultured Sudra population of the age. They may be descendants of Brahmana or Kshatriya forefathers, but in the age of Kali, for want of sufficient education and culture of Vedic wisdom, such a Sudra-like population will define the principles of religion, and persons who are religiously endowed will be terrified by such men. They will declare themselves as adherents of no religious principles, and many isms and cults will spring up in Kali Yuga only to kill the spotless bull of religion. The state will be declared to be secular or without any particular principle of religion, and as a result there will be total indifference to the principles of religion. The citizens will be free to act as they like without respect for Sadhu, Shastra and Guru. The bull standing on one leg indicates that the principles of religion are gradually diminishing. Even the fragmental existence of religious principles will be embarrassed by so many obstacles, as if in the trembling condition of falling down at any time. Translation: the bull was as white as a white lotus flower and was terrified of the Sudra who was beating him, and he was so afraid that he was standing on one leg, trembling and urinating. As we've discussed, the bull is Dharma, and to enlarge the metaphor or enhance the metaphor, we have the bull described here. So the bull is white Dhavala, like a lotus flower, lily pad, Mrinala. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, whiteness refers to purity. So there is purity in the bull, or purity in Dharma. Often we have colors also associated with gunas, so black for tamaguna, red for rajaguna, and white for sattvaguna. So of the three, sattvaguna is better, and it's the pure one. Of course, sattvaguna is also material, but it is preferable over the other gunas, so it is relatively pure. And of course, if we go beyond the material world, then everything is nirguna, pure than anything, purer than sattva, pseudo-sattva. Here we have the Dharma being purity. This includes, of course, the Varnashram Dharma system. But as I mentioned previously, it cannot be disconnected from Supreme Lord. If we disconnect the system, it may look nice, and it will have similar external qualities, but it will not function properly because people cannot control their senses, and consequently there will be exploitation of that system for from different persons, and therefore it will fail ultimately. Therefore we have to have some element of the Lord in it. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur has termed this system the Daiva Varnashram system, because it is connected to the Supreme Lord. It may be a little bit indirect, but nevertheless there is some connection there. If we have a system without the Lord, as described here in the purport, Prabhupada talks about the atheistic people ruling, then This is maybe a varnashramic system, but it is asuric varnashram, opposite. So we're not interested in the asuric varnashram system. We're interested in the daiva varnashram system, one which is connected to the Supreme Lord. So that was the system that was handed down by the ancient sages of India. It was not an atheistic system at all. It was based upon a belief in the Supreme Lord. And when their connection is there and it is implemented properly, then it works fine. Of course, we know that due to the progress of Kali Yuga, that system has failed and has been actually been overthrown by many people. And of course, in India at the present time, we have a different system. We have a democratic system. And largely, people will criticize that old system as being archaic, old-fashioned, prejudiced, etc. So they, when it is mentioned, they rather hesitate to support anything connected with varnashram system. So if it is misapplied and its principles are misunderstood, then, like anything, it can have disastrous results. And if it is done properly, then it will have good results. So we should not condemn that system. So one of the mistakes, of course, is we can disconnect it from the Supreme Lord completely, and the leaders are not dharmic at all, even though they're following a dharmic, what looks like a dharmic system. They're not really dharmic, and they have no faith in God, so therefore ultimately they will be influenced by their personal desires and material motives. So the system will fail. So that's one problem. And of course, the other problem is that if the head is not properly functioning properly, the leader, then all the other parts will not function properly. The whole system will get misused in various ways. So I pointed out previously that one of the problems was that the varnas became determined by birth only, and then this created a big dissatisfaction among the lower castes, that they were restricted, and then they started revolting against that system. So it was not a system which you could rise up. You were stuck at the bottom if you were at the bottom, or whatever like that. So that also is frustration for people to be limited so much. And that was not the original intention of the system, but that's how it turned out in Kali Yuga. So therefore, people criticize that system. So in its pure form, it functions properly. So the bull is white, so it has a purity in it. And we know that the bull was standing on those four legs of truthfulness and cleanliness and austerity and mercy. So these are some of the, not all the qualities, but some of the qualities of that support this system. And these qualities should be present in all the people, not just the brahmanas, but the sudras as well, to some degree. But we know the system is also merciful, so therefore different varnas have different degrees of following rules. So the strictest rules are applied to the brahmanas, and the laxest rules apply to the sudras. So they have more leeway for sense gratification, less rules, and the brahmanas have to very strictly follow all the rules. So this is also a practical system for everyone. In this way, it's according to qualification, the amount of rules you have to follow. This system of, by qualification also gets upset in Kali Yuga, so therefore we have all sorts of problems. As is mentioned here, the bull was standing on one leg only, so out of four parts of Dharma, one was left. So everything decreases as the yugas progress. In Satya Yuga we have four legs, Treta Yuga three legs, Dwarpa Yuga, two legs, Kali Yuga, one leg of Dharma, one quarter Dharma left out of the full Dharma. And we find that also everything else changes. So we got the length of the Yugas is four times as much in Satya Yuga, there's three quarters in Treta Yuga, twice as much in Kali Yuga, and then once, one unit in Kali Yuga, 432,000 years. So we multiply that and we get the times 10 and we get the total of 4,320,000 years, made up of the different yugas. And the people in the different yugas, they have different lifespans, so the people in Satya Yuga live the longest, and then as reduced by a factor of 10 in Treta Yuga, a factor of 10 in Dwarpa Yuga, until we get Kali Yuga, you get 100 years at maximum, if you're lucky. And even that starts declining. So everything shrinks, all the good aspects of life shrink as we get to Kali Yuga. So this is a, you could say it's an arrangement of the Supreme Lord in response to the natures of people. So in other words, the Lord also understands that there are a lot of people in Tamagun. So they have to be catered to somehow. So Kali Yuga gives a chance for the Tamagun people to become very prominent and exert their powers more and more. Or we can also say that as the yugas progress, the demonic influence becomes stronger and stronger. So we have less demons attacking or getting control in Satya Yuga, and then we got the most demons predominating in Kali Yuga. So we can take it in terms of demoniac forces versus sattvic forces or bhakti forces. And when we get to Kali Yuga, then the good aspects of sattva and bhakti are minority, and tamas is prominent. So this is, of course, elsewhere it's explained in Bhagavatam that all the gunas are there in the material world, and we like Satya Yuga, Sattva Gun better than the others, we prefer that, but it's Prakriti, and Prakriti has three gunas, and they're always changing. And so therefore sometimes Sattva Gun is prominent, as in Satya Yuga. Sometimes Raja Gun is prominent, sometimes Tamagun is prominent. So in Kali Yuga we get Tamagun becoming very prominent. That's why it said here the Sudra is attacking, he's in Tamagun. So the gunas fluctuate all the time, but they also fluctuate in a broad scale and regularly, from sattva down to tamas, sattva down to tamas, and this will get yuga cycles taking place. So that in that sense it's regulated. But within that, then we have individuals who in a tamasic environment are sattvic also. We may get a period of sattva within Kali Yuga. So it's not completely tamasic. Within that general tendency, there's also some variation. In any case, all the gunas will manifest at certain times. So Krishna gives some opportunity for tamagun to manifest, and he's very merciful, so he keeps it short compared to the other yugas. It's the shortest one. But it has to be there as part of material nature. And people, according to their desire and according to their karma, jivas get opportunities. So those who are human beings get the opportunity to express their tamagun natures in Kali Yuga, the population of tamagun, because previously they were longing for that type of experience, so that they end up in tamagun yuga and they can do their activities. Of course, we also know that ultimately it fails, so therefore everybody gets destroyed, the bodies get destroyed, and Kali Yuga ends, and then finally the Lord makes everything into Satya Yuga again. And in that sense, sattva is prominent, sattva wins, and tamas is completely, minimal in that age. So anyway, this is the arrangement made by the Lord. So in one sense, it's inevitable that Kali Yuga will manifest and demons will become strong in certain periods of time. Of course, the Lord also is merciful, even in this case of more prominence of Tamagud. So we always see that when the demons get strong, then the Lord interferes sometimes. If the Devatas cannot conquer the forces of evil, then the Supreme Lord Himself will come and do that. So we find all these stories in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto onwards, how the Lord will interfere sometimes and do something for the Devatas. So he comes as avatars, like Narsimhadev to kill Hiranyakasipu when he became very strong, or Varaha to kill Hiranyaksha, and he disturbed the whole Bhumandala. When the Devatas lost the nectar, then the Lord came as Mohini and stole the nectar from the demons and gave it to the Devatas. And after that they had a big battle and were fighting away. And then at one point the demons were using all their magical powers and creating wind weapons and fire weapons and water weapons, flooding everywhere with water and then inundating everything with fire and having big tornadoes and stuff go around for the Devatas. And then of course then we have the earthly things, they were showering elephants and rocks and trees on the Devatas. So the Devatas were beginning to feel a little helpless, and then the Supreme Lord Himself appeared. And He helped the Devatas get control of the situation and, you know, defeat the demons. So when there is such a big problem, then the Lord may personally interfere. When it's a lesser problem, then He'll make arrangements through different personalities and devotees to handle the situation, or let the Devatas handle it. So, unfortunately, the jivas who are born into Kali Yuga and into all these unfortunate situations have to bear that material situation. There's nothing we can do. Even if one is in Satya Yuga, very peaceful, for the devotee, even that body is useless. It may look nice, just as Swarga Loka may also look very nice, but ultimately for one who is on the spiritual path, all of this looks useless. All of this is something to be rejected. So even the situation in Satyuga is to be rejected finally, because it's connected with material bodies. And even Swarga Loka becomes useless. The devotee will reject that. So the devotee finally is, it doesn't matter where he is, and therefore the devotee prays, whether I'm in heaven or hell, let me be a devotee of the Lord, or let me be, have the association of devotees. That's all I need. Therefore, in spite of the external situations, the devotee survives, and the Lord helps those devotees in that situation. So the devotees don't have to fear for that. The Kali Yuga becomes very prominent, and it's described how later in the Bhagavatam, and partly in the 12th canto and even the 9th canto, how some generations after Parikshit, everything failed. And then finally, the kings were not in that line. We have all kings from all sorts of places, unknown places probably. They don't even know what their history was, becoming the kings. Which shows that, in other words, the Sudra population got control and they were the kings. When we say Sudra here, of course, then that's a polite term, because some of the population, the people who got control, weren't even Sudras. They were outcasts or something like that. And then we have other people coming in. So then we get the Muslims coming in and dominating for, I don't know, 500 years or so. And then we get the British coming in for a few hundred years again. Because that wasn't even Sudra, technically speaking. We can say it's all it wasn't really Varnashramic qualified people who were in that system ruling at all. So for many, many years in Kali Yuga, it was the whole society was disrupted, in some cases more than other cases, or sometimes more than other times. So looking back on this, the beginning of Kali Yuga, We can see that already it has become highly disrupted and therefore quite miserable for the people in general. But Bhagavatam is the light in Kali Yuga, so if we take the light of the Bhagavatam, then we can succeed very nicely. So the Bhagavatam, of course, is, because it is the essence of all scripture, it is, and it's also meant for the people of Kali Yuga, we could say that it is the practical advice for the people of Kali Yuga. But at the same time, we know that it's also for the Paramahamsas, who are very, very special people. And people of lower qualification cannot approach it. They will get all sorts, they'll make many mistakes when they try to understand what the Bhagavatam is trying to say. So it does take a person of evolved consciousness to appreciate what the Bhagavatam is saying. Because it is the essence of all knowledge, and it's the essence of everything. But at the same time, if one can understand it, it creates a solution for all the problems. We see that Kali Yuga here is, we have unqualified kings in control. And then finally, it's not one king, we have many kings. And after that, we don't even have kings. We got other governments in control that I don't even have kings that change every few years. We get all sorts of strange systems coming up in the world. And as that also happens in Kali Yuga, we also get divisions of faith. We get other religions coming up. So we don't just have the Vedas. Then we have Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, whatever. All these other things coming up as well in different places. We get separate country identities. Everyone identifies with their particular nationality and their language and their country, and everybody is separate. We get a lot of separatism taking place in terms of peoples. They're not one people, they're many, many different types of people, different races of people, so to speak. And we get all sorts of different religions coming up, all proclaiming themselves to be, you know, supreme. And so in this sense, we get a lot of sectarianism coming up. Everybody has their own little group and they think we're right and you're wrong. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that, he uses the word sampradayak in a negative sense, that you're a little group of people and you're another group of people and another group of people and they're all separate. And he says they identify themselves by certain characteristics, the most superficial, which is external, ways of dressing. Language that you use, let's say tilak, we have tilak or whatever like that, your particular doctrines, like Mahayana doctrine or Buddhist doctrine or whatever like that, and you put labels on these things. And then we have the different customs that they do, or the different types of worship they may do, or no worship, or whatever they do. So everyone identifies with that those particular external type of signs. And then everyone's different. We have different religions around the world. So the Bhagavatam is a counteraction to that. It's to present something common for everybody, beyond all of the sectarian type divisions or superficial differences that we'll find in all sorts of people. So that, what is that, we could say the universal dharma, we call the nitya dharma, that is common to all people ultimately, if we get rid of their gross material identification and attachment and whatever, and then we end up with a common goal, because everybody's a jiva, and the jivas have certain qualities in common. So ultimately, what is that common element? It is that nitya dharma, that eternal dharma. And what is that eternal dharma? It is love of God. So if everybody strives for that, then no problem. But when we concentrate on the externals and we talk about differences, then we got problems. So because people began to identify with the problems and, you know, are with the externals so much, and they create divisions, then we get religious wars. wars based on religion. And because of that, and then people in the modern world say, we don't like religion because it's all, you know, it just creates conflict. Okay? So again, this is because if we misapply the religion and we only identify with the external things, I'm different from you because of this, this, and this, and we fight, that's not the real purpose of the religion at all. Ultimately, it's founded upon this relationship with the Supreme Lord, that love of God. And if that is concentrated on, then there's no problem. But when we concentrate on the externals, then we end up with all these problems. So modern people say, oh, religion is, it causes division, war, all this. This is for neophytes. It's for non-intellectual, fanatical people, whatever. Let's get rid of it. So that's why all the governments of the world's provinces, they're all secular now. Because of religions, it just creates more friction, more conflict. So let's not have, let's not support that at all. Let's be all secular. But then what that means ultimately it becomes atheistic. That's the other alternative. So that's the position in the modern world. However, because people are people, and the majority have a little bit of consciousness, there's a little hope that that consciousness can feel its own nature, whatever, and be dissatisfied with all of these limited types of labels that are put on people, and they'll still strive for you know, the actual religion or the actual goal of life, which is establishing that relationship with the Supreme Lord, in spite of the, you know, propaganda to the opposite in the modern world. So that's the hope for humanity, but how can we cultivate that instinct in people, that basic potential that is there? So the Bhagavatam, of course, gives the highest thing. Okay, Radha Krishna and Vrindavan, which may be a little bit difficult for people to accept at the beginning. So in that sense, it's rahasya. But it also gives the gradual steps. So you could have the, but still, it has to be related to that love of God. We cannot forget that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls the people who understand this real essence as the relationship with God, that they're the sargrahis, those who accept the essence. And they go beyond the externals. And those who are interested in the externals, and all, they're called the barha grahis. They're the ones with burdens on their back, like donkeys. They're carrying all this luggage of anarthas and material identities and differences in them. So these people, they can't have real religion. It's difficult for them. But one can work on them gradually and convert them and let them understand the real essence of life. So Bhagavatam presents the highest, the essence, and then in its highest aspect as Krishna. But then it also gives us methods of cultivating or pushing people in the right directions. So, in other words, it's practical also, so we can't expect all people to go for worship of Radha Krishna at the very beginning. So we have step by step, and therefore even the Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and Astanga Yoga are also described in the Bhagavatam as intermediate steps towards the final goal. So in this way, people are encouraged to at least get on the right track. And even if they're still attached to the material world, we can encourage them to still have a little bit of inquiry about spiritual life. Or what we say, we have to use a different word because everybody is so scared of religion and sectarianism, so we say spirituality instead. So somehow let them appreciate something about their real nature as Atma instead of body. And if they can, even to a small degree, get interested, very good. And from that they can go a little further. It may take many lifetimes, but still, if they can at least distinguish their spiritual nature from the material body and understand that the Atma has to get some satisfaction separate from material things, then it's a step in the right direction. So to make it even more practical, then we also get the major process of Kali Yuga, Nam Sankirtan. So that's the way in which people who have no interest at all, even if they hear the name suddenly, they'll get a little bit of interest in Atma that way. So we have all sorts of strategies for raising the consciousness of the people in Kali Yuga in spite of the degraded conditions all around us. Well, I think probably the way we see in the Bhagavatam, the Lord only comes at certain times. He's not coming all the time, but at least he comes once every yuga. Plus he comes as Lila avatars, which are periodic throughout the day of Brahma. But at least we get one per yuga. Sometimes we get a few more. We're a little more fortunate in Kali Yuga. We got Kalki at the end. We got the yuga avatar. We got Buddha here also. So we get a few avatars coming in Kali Yuga. But still, the appearance of the Lord personally is not all the time. He's not here all the time in one sense. In another sense, he is, because not on earth, but other places. So we have on Vamanadeva, he is present throughout our whole 71 yuga cycles. So he's there, he's not with us, but he's down on Sutala Loka and other places. So. And if there's a big problem, he may interfere somewhere. But the reason that the Lord's not there all the time, I believe, is because he will only appear in extreme circumstances, in many cases, when it's very necessary. And other times he leaves it up to the human beings to handle the situation. But then he also leaves the devotees there. So the devotees are his representatives in the time when he's not personally there, which puts a big responsibility upon human beings, and especially on devotees. But he lets the devotees do all the work, and whether it's the Lord personally doing it or it's the devotees, it's the same thing ultimately. We can't expect that everyone simply gets enlightened by the Lord coming and says, okay, I bless you, and you go to the spiritual world. We have to do some work. So he wants us to do our sadhana and cultivate our attraction for the Lord, fight against our anarthas, etc., and gradually advance. So sadhana siddhi is that's the normal way in which we get perfection through sadhana. So he's giving us a chance to do sadhana, in other words, in all these times when he's not personally present.
Another question I ask you, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Kali Yuga, it seems. Like getting up this golden age, and after that it gets pretty degraded.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Do we have any understanding how the Bhagavatam continued beyond that 10,000 years? Because Kali Yuga is quite long.
Well, all we can say is there's much less devotees, and there's more prominence of sinful activity and tamagun. It doesn't mean everything that there's no devotees or whatever. So we say it's less. That's all. And so, therefore, the Bhagavatam continues, but less people are there and believing in it. So, as the yuga goes on, it's less and less and less and less. Obviously, it's more difficult for the devotees to practice as time goes on, until it gets to such a state that then finally Kalki comes and kills all the demons.
Actually, even then we see how the number of bodies reduces. And the Bhagavatam describes how Kalki is born with the particular devotee. Mm-hmm. So they're actually quite resilient in their practice, that even though there's such obstacles, they're still able to maintain.
It's never that there's no devotees. Just like when it's completely nice in Satya Yuga, there's still some demons there also. So even in Kali Yuga, and in spite of all the bad conditions, then we do get some very strong devotees at all periods of time coming out. Yeah. As I said, the devotee is resilient, and they flourish in all sorts of circumstances. We can see in all sorts of difficult circumstances in different countries, they pop up and become devotees in spite of it's unpredictable. We are surprised that it happens, but it happens.
Maybe that's your good fortune. Get up and get to heavenly planet and come back. Okay. Hare Krishna.